Right now, time for Brian Ross. Brian joins us on a Thursday morning at this time with Real News, and we take a look at stories that are out and about there. And unfortunately for us, a main story continues to be the Ukraine. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you. Yes, it does.
You know, there's so many different side stories to what's going on in the Ukraine. One of the interesting ones I find is the story that America and its allies and NATO discovered a real chink in the armor for the Russian military years ago when they saw what was happening to Russian tanks. And you look now and you see some horrific scenes whenever a tank gets hit, a Russian tank, the turret literally, and these things are heavy, blows 25 to 50 feet in the air. You know, instantaneously, the three-member crew has perished with that. And this doesn't happen with other countries' tanks because the Russians don't store their ammunition in a secure place. They have it right in the turret so they can load and fire quickly. And this has been something that the Allies have known about for years, and the Russians have done nothing about it.
And it's fascinating that, you know, we've planned for that, and the anti-tank missiles, you know, are so very effective, a real turning point in the war. And, you know, future wars will be fought much differently because this is essentially a battlefield test of who's got the better equipment. And so far, the Russians are showing that they are inept in that category, and their army, even though it's massive, has, as you say, real, shall we say, Achilles heels.
You know, it's hard to fight a land war when you can't have the military might of armored vehicles. And what's really even more surprising, Brian, is they don't have air superiority. That just simply amazes me.
And you wonder why that is, and I guess in part because you know, the anti-aircraft and the shoulder-fired missiles, that the Stingers and so on, that the U.S. has provided, are very, very effective. And, you know, of course, the U.S. military is watching closely to see what works and what doesn't. But I think they have to reconsider the might of the Russians, which, of course, raises the other question that if they really can't fight conventionally, does that force Putin to do something much more drastic with a weapon of mass destruction, either chemical or nuclear?
You know, that's what I was going to lead to. If you've done this invasion bit, and A, you see your tanks and your troop carriers are dangerous to your troops, and that's why the casualty level is so high. B, you don't have air superiority for whatever reason, and also you lost your main battle command in the sea, and three other ships have been sunk, and now the Ukraine is actually attacking targets 20 miles and one target almost 200 miles inside of Russia, blowing up fuel and weapons depots. I mean, you're right. That is something that really now comes to the forefront. Russia has very little left to pull out of its hat and try to get out of this.
You know, and it's very dangerous to have a cornered dictator with autocratic power who may have his own health issues, and some say, you know, is a different person than he was years past. It seems like there's a reason to celebrate, but there's some real danger lurking here in terms of, as they've often said, what is the off-ramp here? At what point is a win possible? You know, the U.S. is saying, Secretary of State Blinken went to Kyiv over the weekend and said, you know, he thinks now the Ukraine can win. What does that mean, win? A total and complete defeat of the Russian army?
I
don't know, and I think that, you know, they've done the tabletop exercises trying to imagine or guess what, and no one really can get in Putin's head, but what will he do if everything fails? He can throw everything he has at it. Is that still going to be enough?
It's amazing. Well, we'll leave the Ukraine and we'll go to something that we haven't seen much in the past 10, 15 years, and that is a prisoner swap between Russia and the United States.
Right. It was fascinating to see the video exchange of, you know, it's like the exchange at in the Cold War in Berlin across the two bridges. We got back a U.S. Marine who had been accused of attacking Russian police, and they got a Russian who was dealing cocaine.
The visual aspect that was the thing, the part that that really got to me. But it was a throwback to the movie that Tom Hanks was in, really. And it was done in Turkey, and it was amazing to see it play out on TV. That's all I
can say. We've seen a few swaps like that. We called the big roundup of Russian spies here around New York. Seven or eight of them were exchanged. It does happen. It's not very often. And I guess in a sense it makes you think, well, at least the U.S. and Russia are talking at some level about some things on which we can possibly find agreement. It's hard currently because I think almost correctly Russia sees, they've got all these countries against them. They think they're at a war with NATO. And that leads, of course, back to that question of Ukraine. At some point, does Russia expand the war into a NATO country, which changes everything at that point?
Well, what's interesting is I think what Vladimir Putin has learned a lesson that a united NATO that he tried to break up and a united European Union, which he also tried to break up, this all turned out against him. He is the person responsible for uniting all these countries against Russia.
Yeah, he, and I'd like to give some credit to the President of the United States, Joe Biden, who has found a way with his National Security and State Department staff and leaders to bring some 60 countries into the battle, supplying new armaments and weapons for Ukraine, pledging to help rebuild the country. For Putin to look at that and say, I've got 60 countries lined up against me, he's got to wonder what he exactly has done.
It reminds me of George Herbert Walker Bush putting together that I think 74 countries when Iraq raided their raided their neighbor, and of course that worked, and everybody was so upset when the United States didn't go to Baghdad, and Schwarzkopf made a very wise decision, saying that's not the mission we were on. The mission we were on, we succeeded at.
Exactly. And that's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's come back to this country here and see what you think about going on in the Republican Party with Donald Trump now really getting upset at party members about what's going on in Pennsylvania. You've got the January 6th committee getting that incredible, seeing that testimony from. I hate to call her a congresswoman because she's just so wacky, but she is. There's just so much going on in the U.S. political scene.
There is, and for Republicans, they it'll be a real test of Trump's influence, his ability to change these elections, and they'll be coming up soon, next month. But the primaries across various states where Trump has weighed in and are candidates that he likes. Or candidates he can't stand, who he feels turned on him, who he's trying to oppose. But already we're seeing some instances where the polls don't back up the Trump favorite candidate, like the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, who Trump wants unseated because Kemp had the temerity to speak the truth about the election outcome. And candidate, the former Senator Perdue, who Trump is backing, is way behind in the polls, and doesn't appear to be having a chance to win, which will be a real defeat for Donald Trump.
And now you've got DeSantis as going on his own campaign junkets himself. I mean, the guy obviously is positioning himself a run in primaries against Donald Trump and whoever else runs.
It's really fascinating. Talking with Charlie Black, longtime GOP strategist, who is no friend of Trump, but he's very loyal to Republicans. And he thinks that the writing is on the wall and that there are certain people already in the Republican Party who are preparing to test the waters in serious ways, ready to take on Trump because they see weaknesses, including Nikki Haley out of South Carolina, the governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, going to New Hampshire to sort of test the waters there. Chris Christie, we know about, is already saying he's likely to run. So Republicans seem to be lining up, which makes it a fascinating 2024 that's to come after the midterms.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all develops and pans out. Well, an interesting week just about across the board on so many different levels, and at least we lead out the environment. Lake Mead, lowest level ever in history, lowest level ever. That's in it, and if that doesn't shake your bones, it should.
I'll say, we've got a lot of problems, and it's sort of like, wouldn't it be nice just to be able to talk about Republican politics, but in Democratic politics and all that's going on, but, a raging war in Europe and a climate that is not improving.
And that raging war that could spill out into other countries in Europe, not just Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting times. Interesting times. Brian, thanks for joining us again. Have a great weekend.
Great to be here. Looking forward to a good weekend.
Okay. Take care, Brian.
Okay.
I'm Brian Ross with Real News here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. You can also find Brian on our website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.